Welcome to the SparkCom podcast, where we talk about trends, innovation, and what's coming next. My name is Manny Turan.
And I'm Adam Hartung.
We are Spark Partners. To learn more about how we can help your business grow, go to sparkpartners.com. And for today's discussion, I wanted to bring out a conversation regarding the people that business owners and executives keep in their stable. We're talking about advisors, we're talking about business consultants, we're talking about mom, dad, Uncle Jerry. Who are the people that are in the position as of leadership in a business, who do they draw their inspiration, who do they get advice from? And so I'll start there, Adam. I want to get your thoughts, and then I have some thoughts about it as well.
Well, most people get advice from the wrong place. That's pretty simple. And usually it's because they don't know what they're looking for. You know, they don't know what to even ask for. They're just saying, I've got a business. I want some help. Let me get somebody to talk to about it. And then they reach out. And usually it's, as you said, a friend, a family member, maybe somebody that they saw as a mentor at some point in time, maybe an old professor, you know, something like that. Something that it's usually what I would call the comfortable shoe, right? They try to find a comfortable shoe that they want to exchange things with, as if somehow that person is going to be able to tell them how to have a wildly successful business.
Yeah, it's very unlikely that unless it's Uncle Joe that made it big by growing his company to scale, it's likely the wrong people, the wrong person.
And even with that, Uncle Joe or your father or your stepfather or your father-in-law or any of these people are usually, could likely be a generation older. And what they're going to do is tell you the story of their life, right? Well, this is what I did to be successful. What makes you think that's applicable in 2021? Right? If they made a successful business in 1995 or earlier, and then they, sold it or still operating today, but, the big growth is way behind them, then, what makes you think, again, that they're going to be the kind of person that's going to take your business where you want it to be in 2030?
Yeah, absolutely. So where do they go? I mean, I remember when I ran my business, I had an advisory group. They were made up of contemporaries, except for one was sort of like Uncle Joe, we just talked about. But everybody else was contemporaries that were actually in the middle of running businesses and not from my industry. So I got some interesting perspectives, but I didn't get a lot of deep buy-in, right? They were just telling me off the cuff information. I don't think they really fully immersed themselves in my business. And it's really easy to give advice when you're sitting in the armchair of a situation and not in the battlefield.
Yeah, I think, well, let's start off with, just the structure of your advice. One thing you could try to do is put together a board of directors. Historically, this hasn't been very effective. Why not? Well, first of all, you probably didn't pay them anything. You said, hey, come be on my board of directors. I'll give you 1% of the company or something like that. Well, when somebody gets, a piece of paper that says they have 1% of something that doesn't look like it's worth a whole lot of money, and they have no place to sell that 1%, right? There's no market for it. And they don't know how they'll ever, turn that into something valuable. Then how much time are they going to put into trying to, give you advice or help you as a member of the board of directors? They're probably going to say, let's talk 4 times a year and let's talk about whatever you need to talk about, right? It's your business. You just pose me some questions. I'll answer some questions. And by the way, because I'm on the board of directors, I feel compelled to talk about your legal issues and I feel compelled to talk about your financial issues because that's what a board of directors by law is supposed to do. Look out for the best interest of the investors. So that tends to get focused on finance and legal. So I don't see, a board of directors is not really a good structural tool for trying to get somebody that's going to help give you advice about your business. Because as you said, what's the buy-in there? I mean, you may think you just gave away something precious giving away 1% of your company, but from the receiver's end, it doesn't look all that valuable to them, right? They aren't really vested in your success. They want to be helpful, and it's kind of like, I was in the casino. Someone handed me a dollar bill. I decided to put it in a slot machine. That's the approach that I think most people on a board takes. And that doesn't even change for big companies. You look at how Sears went bonk. Look how GE went bonk. That's because the board's sitting there getting paid to do 4 meetings a year. The chairman or who's usually the CEO or the lead director sets up the agenda. You don't even get to say what's on the agenda. You go to the meeting. Time's allocated for whatever you're going to talk about. You do it. And mostly it's the CEO just sitting there saying, hey, I want to let you know what I'm doing and keep you informed. If you object, You don't get any extra money. If you say you want to review something, you don't get any extra money. Any waves you make that cause extra work just makes other people aggravated because now they're having to work harder, but nobody gets any extra money. And so most, you know, boards of directors, even when you talk about a Sears or a GE, they're not really effective tools for helping you run your business.
So then how do you effectively run your business, right? You've run businesses. So have I. We've been in touch with hundreds and maybe even thousands of customers and clients, and I think we've got a pretty good idea, but I want to hear you say it.
Well, okay, I want to go now to the sort of the next idea, which is a lot of people say, well, I'm going to hire a consultant. And I think what we have to be aware is that consultants are very good for solving problems. So if you have a specific problem, you can say, I'm going to hire a consultant, like, oh, I want to build a sales force, or I want to set up a new compensation plan for my sales force, or I want, you know, something related. I want to find out how to take my business into the western part of the U.S., or I want to see if I could export something to China or South America. You get a consultant. Why? Because they're an expert in one thing. They can talk to you about that one thing, and they'll try to solve that one problem. By definition, it's going to be narrow because you hire consultants with great fear of what they're going to charge you. You say, okay, if we let these guys go unbounded, you know, it's going to be incredibly expensive. And all they're really going to try to do is borrow my watch to tell me the time anyway. So let's be sure that we keep them very, very narrowly focused. But the world's not a narrow place, right? You want to export to Brazil, they might start telling you about how to do Brazil. They don't realize you got problems with your manufacturing or where your supply chains originate in South America or in the Far East. They don't know what your manufacturing plans are for the future. They don't know how much demand equals supply and whether you got a backlog of inventory or you're selling everything out. I mean, there's all these things you're not going to tell them because in the multivariable complex world that you live in, you want them to solve one problem. So that's why people get mad at consultants. They'll be like, well, you know, they studied it. They gave me an answer, but I don't know how to implement this given all the other variables that I have to deal with in my business.
Right.
So, I mean, consultants, I'm not putting them down. I'm a consultant. I've done a lot of consulting work, but I tend to be very, very careful and very aware of saying, look, when I'm going to try to solve this problem, I need to know something about the context in which it's going to be solved.
Yeah.
But vast majority of consultants don't worry about that. I mean, they're just like, okay, you're hiring me to do a job. I'm going to do a job. So that's why, you sit and say, well, okay, if you're not going to do it on a board and you can't get my buddies on the board to help me out, and if hiring a consultant isn't going to give me the answer to my problem, what do I do? And I think the issue here we're trying to get to is you need a coach. If you think about what a coach does for you, let's take, like, for example, professional athletes. There isn't a golfer out there that doesn't have a coach. Now, I like to golf. I know you're not much of a golfer, Manini, but I'm
growing. I'm growing in my abilities.
What's fascinating to me is how many people I've met and they golf and they go out and they shoot the score and it's not as low as they want. Then I'll say something to them about, oh, okay. So they say, well, I had trouble today putting, or I had trouble today with my drive or whatever. Okay, that's fine. And I'll say, oh, so, you know, do you have a coach? And they'll say, oh, no, no. And I'm like, oh, so you're going to work that out on your own, huh? You're going to lower that score on your own. Does when Tiger Woods was still playing golf, you realize he had four coaches, right? When Rory McIlroy is out there, warming up on the day before or the day of a tournament, he's got two or three coaches watching everything he does.
I think I told you I'm taking up some golf lessons. I've got a coach myself. And one thing he said, this guy is great. He's very hands-on. He just jumps right in. He's very transparent. He doesn't mince words. He's expensive as well because of it. But he said this clearly to me. He says, the reason that I'm here as a coach is because you can't see yourself swing the club. You can't see yourself. I can see you, and there's all kinds of technology you can employ to see yourself, but you can never see yourself the way I see you.
Right. Right. I mean, it's just so true because he's outside the box. You're in the box. He's outside the box, and then he can give you advice about things that you need to do. And the other thing is that as a coach, he's looking at everything. So any good golf coach will tell you that he never gives you more than one thing to change per lesson. You know, there might be eight things in your swing that need improvement, but you don't try to change all eight of them at one time. You say, today we're going to focus on your grip. We're going to focus on how you use your hands or how you follow through or how you pull into your backswing, and you'll focus on one thing and then go off and practice that for a while. Because why? The coach is thinking about the context. He's thinking about who you are, what you're going to do, how you're going to take it to the course, how you're getting, how effective things have been in the past. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the movie. It stars Kurt Russell as the coach who put together the U.S. hockey team that beat the Russians, 30 years ago, something like that?
Yeah, exactly.
When the Russians you had no professional athletes in the Olympics. There were no professional athletes, but the Russians, of course, cheated because they didn't have professional athletics, so their very best they considered them amateurs. And they always just slaughtered everyone. And Kurt Russell was this coach who put together a team that went to the Olympics, and I think they called it the Miracle on Ice or something like that,
yeah.
And they beat the Russians, and they won the gold medal in the Olympics. And you look at that, and you say, what did Kurt Russell, what did that coach actually do? He looked at the context saying, what do I have to do to put the pieces together to win? He's looking at many pieces, you know, the forwards, the back people, center ice. Then how am I going to play the game? And who is my competition? Who am I going up against? He's looking at all these factors and he's putting things together. And I think that's the part that you need. You have to have people that are taking in this context, you know, the whole world.
And I think it goes beyond that. So if we use the analogy of piloting a sailboat, you know, a consultant will walk up to you, push you out of the way, take the reins for a while, and then bow out and say, good luck, right? I took care of you. I got you through the weeds. I got you through the rocks. I got you through these big swells, whatever. And then they walk away. I think the business coach and the ones that we, you know, the things we do, as well as your own experience, keeps you in that driver's seat, but lets you know that, hey, listen, when the swells come this way, this is what you need to look out for. And I think that sort of like having the experience is important. But if it goes beyond that, because of course, the coaches that coach Tiger Woods and all these other hardcore golfers, they're not as good necessarily than the people that they're coaching, but they're better at coaching than they are at playing. It's a special skill.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like educators. You know, educators are that same way. They'll they know how to teach, and they might know how to do. But they know they reach the limit on what they can do, and they can help other people get beyond them, right? And they enjoy that. That's where they get their success. That's what they like. To keep extending this golf analogy, there's a movie called The Legend of Bagger Vance with Matt Damon. And Matt Damon's going to play golf against a couple of the most famous golfers of all time. And this mysterious caddy shows up to help him out with his golfing. And there's this point where he has to hit a certain shot, and the caddy pulls out a club, and I think it was like a 2-iron, but this is, you know, staged 100 years ago, and he hits this ball and he goes, wow, that's fantastic. So then movie goes on a little bit and he gets in a tough position. He goes, Bagger, hand me that same club again. And he goes, you sure? And he goes, yeah, hand me that same club. And he goes, there's a time to use that club and there's a time to leave it in the bag. And he says, nope, I want that club. Takes it out and immediately blows the shot, because he was not in the right position. And that's what the coach is like. He's like, you know, you get used to using the same tools. You want to you have success with a tool, and then you'll use it again and again and again. And a coach is somebody that can say, you know, you're overusing that tool. You're using it in the wrong time. You're using it in the wrong places. In this context, in this situation, we need to be thinking about what is the right tool based upon, you know, who you are, what you got as your assets, and what you're competing against in order to try to win the business.
Yes. And I think one of the things that we do very well is what we present to our coaching clients is really some very unconventional wisdom. And, you know, wisdom is one of those things that is interesting. There's a sort of collective wisdom about how things are quote unquote supposed to go. But then there's this underlying wisdom that I think comes from a deeper place, a deeper level. And I remember the first time I actually had employees, I was a manager. The first time I managed employees, I was handed a book called Now Break All the Rules. And it was a great book that basically had nothing but unconventional wisdom. And I remember one story about, so say we've got two territories. We have Arizona and we have New Mexico. And the New Mexico salesperson is just killing it. Quarter after quarter, you never have to worry about them. They're just doing a great job. The Arizona one, there's always a struggle. They're always a half step behind, dollar late, you know, day late, dollar short, all that. And so conventional wisdom tells you, hey, listen, go help the guy in Arizona. He's the one that's slacking off, that's not doing too well. Focus on that person. But in all actuality, all the data has shown that if you help the person in New Mexico, they can actually become that much better, and that you're wasting your time with the other person, that perhaps they're in the wrong role. Perhaps you just need to walk away from that situation and hire somebody else. And so from the time I met you, Adam, a few years ago, it's been constant unconventional wisdom that we've thrown into the arena. And part of the other thing that I would say, in addition to a business coach, I think having an intentful strategy to you yourself as the business leader grow. And that's why I think our course is so impactful.
Yeah.
It gives you, it doesn't just tell you how to drive the boat. It tells you why to do this when this thing happens, why to do that when that thing happens.
You know, 8 or 9 years ago, I caught a show about a coach who was a kicking coach in the pros, in the NFL. And he had had universal success improving every single person that he had ever helped. And he was a paraplegic. He was forced into a wheelchair and had never played football ever in his life. But he loved football, and he studied and studied and studied the game and kicking. And he started to see things about how people kick that really were much more successful. And what was interesting was the reason he was successful was because previously all kicking coaches had been kickers. So what they did was they came in, looked at they said, this is the way I kick. This is how I was successful. I look at a few other guys. Now, you know, this is the way we are as kickers. So kicker to kicker, here's what I want you to do. This guy never was a kicker. And it forced the people, the kickers themselves, to sit back and say, okay, I'm being coached from a different frame of mind. I'm being coached from a different perspective. I'm being coached from somebody who studied on this and figured out how to make it be really, really good. Not because they were going to be a kicker, but because they wanted to teach people how to be kickers. And that's where I think what the part of the point you're trying to make here. The person who's being coached has to be willing to accept coaching. Your salesperson in Arizona might not have been doing well, but we don't know why, right? And if you don't know why and you can't get specific about it, then you can't do much to help out, right? And he might not be, and a lot of times people aren't very good at accepting coaching. Now, I've seen people go to golf coaches and the coach say, do this or do that. And they're like, well, that's hard. I'm not going to do that. I play golf for fun. Well, okay, if you want to have a high handicap and you want to go out and lose a lot of balls and that's fun for you, fine. But if you want to get better, if you want to be more successful, then you're going to have to make some changes. So the biggest problem I've seen, it's not usually coaches in business. I think there's some good coaches. The issue is often the person being coached. Are you willing to be coached? Are you willing to take advice from somebody else? You know, like I said, you can get four of your uncles and put them on a board of directors, get together and have barbecue every 2 weeks and ask about the business, and nobody's committed to anything. They're not committed to your success, and you're not committed to implementing what they tell you to do, right?
No, as we've discussed in the past, it kind of boils down to the self. You know, we kind of dip our toe into the philosophy of things, but it's absolutely true. If you are an entrepreneur or executive and you say you want coaching or you want to change your business, but you can't change yourself or you can't make any adjustments to your own mindset, it's not going to go anywhere.
And one of the other problems we have is that there are a lot of business coaches that focus on interpersonal relationships. So they're very successful. They make a lot of money. Coaches who can sit down with you and say, well, you know, if you interact this way with your employees, you'll do better. If you interact this way with your suppliers, you'll do better. If you interact this way with your peers or your boss or whoever, you know, and they look at it, that kind of coaching as being that interpersonal coaching. That sort of seemed like, well, you're going to help me out with my communications to do what I want to do. But when you say to somebody, well, I'm just going to help you make better decisions because I can look at it from a different point of view. I have a different vector. I'm not blocked up. I'm not inside your box. Then people sort of stop and they're kind of like, well, wait a minute. I guess I kind of like that idea, but am I really willing to do it? And that's the biggest problem. Can you get over yourself? Can you say to yourself, I don't have the answers and mean it? You know, we all say, hey, I'm not a genius. We all say, hey, I'm not, you know, I don't have all the answers. We throw those phrases around, but do you mean it? Are you really willing to admit that, you know what, I could probably do a lot better if I had somebody helping me out? Somebody who really did have a vested interest in me. And that's another thing about a coach. Whereas consultants tend to be one-time situations solving one problem, a coach is somebody you want to have around for months, right? It's somebody you want to engage, and you want to compensate them for what they do. You want to say, look, I'm making some decisions. Let's talk these over. Let's, you know, get on the phone. Let's discuss the, you know, read my emails, see what the different options are. Let's talk about what I see as somebody who needs some coaching. And let's talk about what the coach sees, and the coach should be giving options, and it should be a discussion. And then you have to live in the world of competition. So you see, as we do these things, how's it working? How's it not working? Did we give it enough time? These are all very difficult things to do. You know, as they say, it's very difficult to remember that your objective was to drain the swamp when you're butt deep in alligators, right? And so if you're out there fighting the good fight, and you're in the war, and you're in, you know, it's easy to forget what the objective was. It's easy to forget to get tied up in all the work you're doing and lose sight of your strategy, lose sight of what it's going to take to be successful. And so that's where I think, you know, it's really, do you want to be successful? Because if you want to be successful, I don't really know anybody who was really successful that didn't have a coach, right? Didn't have some help. Now, some people are lucky and are born with parents who were very good at it, you know, and good in business. That's good. That's a good coach. Some people have other relatives. Like I said, some people created a mentor in their working relationships. Some people picked up a college professor along the way. And those worked. But if you're not lucky, I mean, those are lucky that they happen. It's better you go find a coach that fits your need, right? That can help you out. I had a golf coach once who was adamant that every time I took a lesson, I would shoot lower the next round of golf. And he really wasn't a good coach for me because I had an objective to want to break a score, a long-term score of 80. I wanted to shoot under 80. And getting a little bit better that week, what was happening is I was going from correcting one problem, and I go for one, then another problem, you know, and we just keep correcting problems, but the total score wasn't going down. And then when I, you know, moved to Nevada, I was able to get a coach, and I told him what I wanted, and he says, okay, we're going to work on part of this for a while until you get that, then we'll go to a second part for a while until you get that. And we did get my score down. You know, I haven't gotten my magic 80 yet, but over the course of literally 3 years, we've been able to get me much more consistent about how I play golf, much more consistent about how I make my decisions about playing golf. But it's been a 3-year relationship. And that's where I think our people need to realize you get a great course, like the one that we have to offer, that can help you start thinking outside the box. Get some of those ideas down around trends, you know, and then think about, okay, what is it I don't know? I need somebody to help tell me what I don't know. You know, the thing that I'm missing, the thing that I should be paying attention to. And, you know, I don't know what I don't know. And I need somebody that can help me find out what I don't know. Talk to me about some hard realities. Talk to me about some hard facts. And again, make sure the relationship is intended to be a long-term relationship. Because if it's not, people will always sugarcoat everything, right? Nobody wants to ruin relationships, especially if there's any money involved. Yeah. So they'll tend to pull easy on the strings, right? They'll tend to be very careful. And you got to make sure that's not what you're asking for. You got to make sure you're in a relationship where you're saying, I want to be successful. Let's be successful together.
No, that's so true. And, you know, when I was running my company, especially towards the end, I felt very isolated. I felt that very few people knew what I was going through. And I joined a group called Vistage. And of course, that's how you and I met initially. And I was with Vistage for about 2.5-3 years. And it was useful in the sense that we had a community of people that kind of knew where I was. But I think the limitations that you've identified is there was no vested interest. It was like, you know, once a month we'd get together for half a day and or maybe a full day and get a lot of value. Don't get me wrong. But what I really needed is interesting is what we're providing now. Our, you know, our coaching process, our course, and being able to really, with a lot of kindness and respect, push the people that we help. And they've got to be open to that. Otherwise, it's not a good relationship. I mean, when they understand that we're helping them out, and we have their best interest in mind, I think that it starts with them to open up and be able to then, you know, make the changes they need to make in order to grow their own business.
And again, you're pointing out one of the problems with another structural approach to trying to get help to be successful, and that's an advisory board. And when people say, let's put together an advisory board of, you know, 6-8 folks or something that will give me feedback. We'll sit down and talk about things and get feedback, and maybe I'll pay them, you know. Well, the issue with that is that those 6 people, why are they there? Now you have a group dynamic you have to deal with. You know, who's the alpha dog in the group, and you know who's got what role. And it doesn't take very long until, you know, of the six people, one's the expert on people, one's the expert on finance, one's the expert on contracts. You know, they start to find out where their niche is in the group and how they're going to interact. And then they also, you know, they're like, I don't want this group to fall apart. So they start paying attention to group dynamics. And if they think one of the people's giving bad advice, they don't say anything. Or you get into this situation where it's, well, my approach is A and his approach is B, and whose approach is better and who's got the biggest walking stick here to try to beat it out of people. It's just why advisory boards are very difficult. I mean, there's a role for an advisory board, but it tends to be in much larger organizations, you know, something up, you know, up there at $100 million plus for sure, you know, $200, $300 million, where you do need multiple points of view. And then typically, you know, you got to be very careful about how you structure the advisory board, and managing the advisory board needs a coach. You really need a leader for the advisory board to be effective. So if you've developed a coach as you've gotten to that size, and then you want to put an advisory board in place, then that coach can help make sure that advisory board is helpful. But just grabbing six random people that are smart and asking them to be helpful, and you'll probably make the mistake again, six people from your industry or six people from your background or you went to school with, you know, people that, again, you're going to fall into the, you know, what the comfortable shoe phenomenon here, yeah. Even when you're reaching out to try to get some outside points of view. So, you know, advisory boards are very, they can be effective, but they've got to be very carefully structured and very carefully managed. And that's why I keep going back to, if you didn't develop a coach along the way, then what makes you think you're going to get six coaches in the room trying to help you figure out how to play the game at the same time?
It's absolutely true. So we spoke about bias in a couple of our podcasts. We have a lesson in our course, Think Innovation, specifically about bias and how to overcome it. And there's a certain level of lemming mentality, everybody running in the same direction over the cliff, when you don't have, you know, when you've got bias in your midst. And so, you know, that's a very powerful concept to remove bias from your meetings, your interactions with your advisors, with your coach, your team. I think it's pervasive in business and in life everywhere.
Yeah, very, very true. Very true. So I think, again, for people who aren't familiar with this and they're trying to figure out how to grow their business, I would say, first of all, you know, you need something like the Think Innovation course just to get you grounded, just to get you started to think about, you know, the 12,000 companies that went into that course, the case studies, the 24 years of research, you know, the prove outs, the comparisons with other approaches to strategy, all that stuff. I mean, it gives you a starting point that's proven, right? It's like the guy who watched the kickers. That's what we did. We watched and watched and watched over a long time. Remember, the study started in 1995. And it wasn't until 2007 that we published the book, Create Marketplace Disruption. So it took 10 years just to kind of wade through that part of it. And now we've had another 15 years of practice. And you know, that's where you want a good coach, somebody who's been there, seen it, played the game, gets out there and still plays the game, but has the background and the information to kind of help you get going. You take the course, you get started putting things down, but as you're working the material, inevitably you're going to have questions. You want to know that whoever provided you the material is somebody you can talk to. Talk through the questions, talk through, you know, what they should try to do about selecting the right trends to follow. What are the right metrics around trends? What external data sources should be the ones to pay attention to most of the time? Where are the key decisions that have to be made given the strategy and how it's likely to unfold? How are external competitors changing the game? What kind of market adjustments, you know, market shifts are happening? What could be predicted? That's the kind of stuff that, you know, you can ask those specific questions and it can all fit within the context. And that's what the course gives you, is a way to put that all in context for really, really effective discussions.
Yeah. Make sure to go to our website, sparkpartners.com. Up on the top, there's a Think Innovation course tab. Take a look. And very impactful information, insights, unconventional wisdom, and some things that can really take your business to the next level. So with that, Adam, I'm going to sign out for today. And upon your final word, I hope you have a wonderful rest of the weekend.
Thank you. Thank you.
Take care.